Blog Talk Radio.
You're coming with us, baby. Yes, yes, yes. That's because we are taking you hostage. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Hey, Binkley, from the weirdest really bad movie. And you want to loosen these ropes a little bit, Dale?
Keeping Dave kind of tied up and in place. Because guys seem to get away from us, so I got to keep people here. We have some great radio for you today. We're continuing our weekend talking about hostages and hostage taking, kidnapping and the like.
Yeah, I mean, today they might have called this carjacking, but this is kind of or hijacking, but still, this is when you're being held hostage, you're being held hostage. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like being held against your will, not in a kinky fun way, but the criminal.
You know, maybe if we have time, we'll get into it. We talked a little bit. I kind of brought it up, but tell you about the time I was held hostage for about 6 hours at gunpoint. Maybe we'll get into that.
Could have knocked me over with a feather. I did not know that about you, and this is an interesting tale, folks.
But it was actually, we did make it on the news. And then when they caught the guys, they came back again. I said, you know what, I already talked to you once. I really don't want to talk to you again. You caught them. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
but we'll see about that. But we have a wonderful, really neat kind of hostage situation tonight because it's done by two people who never get to do a drama. Always known for their comedic abilities. Actually started off as singers, but... Fibbering and Molly in a dramatic role, the first time and only time they did it on Suspense. Like Michael Giorgio was on last night, and we were talking about some of these great comedians that got to do. Bob Hope does a fantastic episode on Suspense called Death Has a Shadow. We had Milton Berle, who did a great one called Rave Notice. If you look for the one in the mid-1950s, not the one in the late 1950s. They just kind of redid the script, but certainly it wasn't quite as effective knowing that it was Milton Berle. Danny Kaye has done Suspense, although we all know that Danny Kaye can act dramatically. I'm trying to think, Ozzie and Harriet did two of them. Lucille Ball did, I think, at least four Suspenses, and two of them she did with her husband, Desi Arnaz. A Red Skeleton did one. It is so great. And Jack Benny did at least two Suspenses. I think he did more than that, but I know of at least two. The Face is Familiar and the one we played here, Plan X. It's such a cool thing to have this great anthology series, and you get some of the best Hollywood actors, and also you get to pull in some of these guys that were known as really only comedians, giving them a chance to act dramatically. I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, and our stars tonight are very unlikely. Jim and Marion Jordan, better known as Fibber McGee and Molly, had a very successful run of their own. Some folks even consider them the golden age of radio, running from 1935 to 1959. That's a pretty successful run.
the actual network half-hour shows started in 35. In 1956, they finished basically because of Marion's health. They weren't able to continue on in that fashion. But what they did do in 1957 is they came back in a 15-minute Monday through Friday version without the studio audience, without a studio audience, It was a little easier for her to physically handle that and not be in for the audience and all that. That lasted a year, and then in 59, actually they ran until 1960, 59 and 60, on the weekends. NBC, up until I think about, I'll have to look it up, I think it was about 1971 or 72, had this program called Monitor. It was on weekends where they did a lot of interviews and things like that. Well, Jim and Phil McGee and Molly did 5-minute segments that kind of told, like, they were like, they did like five-minute segments that kind of told a story that was split up throughout either the Saturday or the Sunday. And that was kind of cool, too. I've heard a few of those episodes. I know they must be out there somewhere, but they're not out there for a lot of the people to just grab onto. And really, what a neat story. I mean, they really both wanted to be singers when they met in good old Peoria, Illinois, and they talk about Peoria a lot throughout their series. They really wanted to be singers. And, of course, her family didn't approve. Jim went on the road, and he ended up coming back and working in the post office. And as soon as he did that, he got drafted for World War I. He actually ended up entertaining the troops over there. Came back, and I guess when he worked at the post office, that's when his Marion was, their family approved of him working at the post office, and that's when they got married. And when he got back from World War I, then they decided, oh, come on, let's go try this vaudeville thing. And it really, they did okay, but not real well, you know, even having their two children and kind of traveling along. And it was really radio where they got their opportunity to kind of star. And by doing that, that led them to, from turning into singers into sitcom actors. And that's where they did. They met up with Don Quinn, the great writer, and actually made him a partner. What they did is all the money they made from the Smackouts, which they end up turning into Phil McGee and Molly, they made him a full partner, and all the money was split between the three of them. And it was Phil McGee that was picked up by Johnson's Wax, and really on the because of the wife of the guy that owned Johnson's Wax, said this would be a good program for you, good people for you to sponsor, and they picked it up and did it for until about 1951 or two in Pet Milk. They dropped in Pet Milk, but they recorded over 700 shows, would say archive, right there at the Johnson Wax headquarters. The first spinoff of a sitcom to a sitcom was done from the Fibber McGee and Molly Show. The first spinoff ever made from a sitcom to a sitcom was the Great Gildersleeve.
Yes, a great one.
They had a second one. They had a second one that spun off also, the Beulah Show. So, which ironically played the Black Maid, which ironically, the very first and one was Marilyn Hurt, who was a white guy who played the Black Maid.
Oh my! Good old radio. It's going to be an amazing twist tonight. I'm really in the mood for a creepy story. It's really thunder booming on this end of Erie House, in this wing of it, if you will, because we're going to be going first into some real suspense before we take a little visit over to Wistful Vista. At Suspense, of course, one of my favorite shows, Dave, you know that.
Yes.
And this one I happen to have heard before, so it's going to be a real thrill to share with Fogsbane and anybody else who's listening. Jokes from the Hood, hey, welcome. Thanks for listening live and participating in the chat.
Yeah, we've got in this show, I think this is one that was also produced by Elliot Lewis, and we've heard so much about him and heard him as well. But he also is in this story as well. So I think he produced it, and he is in the story as well. I don't think he visited Wistful Vista too many times, but it was cool to hear him here with Fibber McGee and Molly.
And what date do we have for this episode of Suspense?
For this episode of Suspense, it was February 22nd of 1951.
Here's part one of Suspense.
The Armed Forces Radio Service invites you to hear Fibber McGee and Molly in Backseat Driver, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It can't happen to you. You read about stuff like that in the papers. Girls murdered and mutilated, drunks left dying in the gutter for the handful of change they had in their pockets. Lonesome old men tortured because some hoodlum gets the idea they're misers with a pot of gold hidden under the floorboards of the shack. Sure, you know it's real, but it can't happen to you. Oh, you get your fair share of trouble. I've been a professional man here in Los Angeles for 30 years. I've met up with bums and grifters and petty sharpers. They're around in any business. But the viciousness, the real deep down dirt, that's for somebody else. You do your work and you go home to your family. And for a real bang-up evening to break the monotony, you take your wife out to a movie. That's what I did that Saturday night. We'd driven all the way in from the San Fernando Valley to Beverly Hills for a picture Ellie especially wanted to see.
Wasn't that a good movie, Joe?
Uh-huh.
Just the kind I like. Songs and dancing and girls in pretty clothes. I get so tired of cops and robbers.
What's wrong with cops and robbers?
Oh, you know what I mean. Murder movies, honestly. All the policemen stupid and all the crooks sneering out of the corners of their mouths.
Yeah, the stuff those Hollywood boys dream of.
Yeah.
You'd think the streets were knee-deep in blood and you couldn't hear yourself think for machine guns. Well, here we are, honey.
You get in first.
Okay. All right, Ellie?
Just a second. All right, Joe. Don't forget gas.
I got plenty to take us out to the valley. I'll fill up at Bill's.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Remember how that song goes, Joe?
What song?
In the picture. You know, Two on the Moon. The one the boy sang to the girl.
Oh, that one. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Oh, heck, I don't know.
Oh, well. We'll be hearing it again on the radio.
How about turning it on?
The radio? Why, sure.
Set it around 1100. We ought to get some news in a few minutes. I'd like to hear whether they caught that fellow.
That awful mass murderer?
Uh-huh. They spotted him in L.A. this afternoon, but he got away.
I know. You told us at supper. Oh, it makes you shiver.
Don't you worry. He won't get away with it. Left the lights of Beverly Hills behind and turned into Coldwater Canyon. It's as quick a way as any to get us across the Hollywood Hills to the valley. It's dark in the canyon, quiet, with mighty little traffic at night. I cut my lights full up and we swept up the side of the ridge. The news program came on, but I didn't pay much attention. The fellow was talking about brush fires. They'd already put out the one near my place, but they were still patrolling it. We were over the ridge and sliding down to the valley before the program got to the part I wanted to hear.
There it is.
Put it up higher, Ellie.
Lewis Matrick wiped out an entire family in Greenlee, New Hampshire. Today he was spotted 3,000 miles from the scene of his crime. At 5:30 this afternoon, a patrolman saw and definitely identified Matrick in downtown Los Angeles. However, by darting through heavy traffic at the risk of his life, the killer was again able to make his escape. According to neighbors of the slaughtered family, Matrick was first appeared in Greenlee about a year ago. From fingerprints in the Noland home, Lewis Matrick has been identified as Lloyd Matthews, ex-convict. He is wanted for questioning in the robbery and murder of a New York storekeeper a year ago, a crime that netted the killer less than $20. Matrick, or Matthews, is 32 years old, height 5 feet 9 inches, weight 155 pounds. He has blue eyes, light brown hair, nose slanted to the left. When seen this afternoon, he was wearing a blue suit and gray pork pie hat.
Awful, awful.
Not pretty, no.
And he's somewhere around L.A. this minute. Joe?
Hmm?
You think it's right, us leaving Annie and Bud all alone while
we... Now, Ellen, Annie's grown up and Bud's a smart youngster, if I do say so myself. You can't wrap kids in cotton wool.
I know. Oh, I'm silly, I guess. Neighbors close all around. All they'd have to do is yell. But now, what would make a young man do a dreadful thing like that?
Could be a lot of things. Maybe he's got a screw loose. Maybe he went nuts over a girl. Maybe he gets a kick out of killing, like some of them do.
You know all the answers, don't you?
Joe!
Hey, what the...
Keep going. Go on, keep going. I got a gun here and I'll use it. Tell him you...
Helly?
Against the back of my neck. I can feel it. Cold.
Well, are you going to move?
Okay. Okay, brother, you're the boss.
Yeah, you said it, I'm boss. And remember it. Otherwise, I'll blow a hole through your wife's head. I've had experience in these things.
I drove that car like we were skirting the rim of the Grand Canyon, with nothing between us and the bottom but a mile of country air. This was it. The thing that happens to other people. To the ones that end up on slabs in the morgue. But not to me. Not to Ellie. The first car we'd seen since we left traffic swooped down behind us. It passed. But not before the headlights caught our passenger clean in my rearview mirror. He was hunched forward, sitting on the edge of the back seat, so he could keep the gun rammed into the nape of Ellie's neck. He had light brown hair, pale eyes, a nose that slanted. His mouth twitched, jittery. As the car went by, his eyes caught mine in the mirror and flickered.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Sure, sure. Lose your hat?
Bright boy. Like I said, you know all the answers. No, I didn't lose it. I stuffed it down the drain.
Still wearing the blue suit, though.
I figured it changed pretty quick now. Think yours will fit me?
You can have the suit and the car, but just let us...
Ellen.
But, Joe, it's Matrick.
The missus is bright, too.
He crawled in here while we were in the movie. Joe, you should have that car door fixed. You know better.
Honey, I meant to. I was going to tend to
Shut
it...
Shut up! Let's see if you can both be bright enough to keep your trap shut. Turn left on Ventura. Take the slow lane. Don't try playing no tricks. I've been in this burg before.
Okay by me.
That's real sweet of you. Straight out to open country, Mac. And I'll take the missus up on that offer, the soup car.
What happens to us?
Why, you just walk home. What else? Play it safe and you ain't got a thing to worry about.
That was a laugh, that was. Nothing to worry about. That'd kill you. Once we got out into the open country, we didn't have a chance of walking away from the car. All a murderer can hope for is time. He doesn't leave witnesses around to get the law on his tail 1 second sooner than necessary. All I could do was stall and pray and make what feeble gestures I could at Lady Luck. The thing that came into my mind was so risky it brought my hair up on end. But there was a chance, provided that trigger finger didn't start jerking. In the bright lights of the boulevard, I didn't think he'd notice. But a traffic officer would. I turned into Ventura, took the far lane, obedient as a whipped pup. We must have made 2 or 3 miles before I saw what I was hoping for.
What's that?
Huh? The red light? Oh, why, an ambulance, I guess. We see a lot of them here.
That ain't no ambulance. It's a motorcycle cop.
Joe, it's young Mike Kennedy. He patrols this stretch.
Look, what are you up to? What are you trying to pull?
Nothing. The kid's a friend of ours.
Think you can get me away easy, huh? I warn you. I ain't gone alone. You asked for it.
Listen, will you? The kid lives near us. Practically grew up under our feet. All he wants is to pass the time of day, or maybe send a message to our Annie.
Yeah?
Yeah. You start popping now and we'll all be dead. Keep your shirt on. I'll get rid of him.
Okay. But it better be good.
I pulled to the curb. Mike came alongside. He sat balancing the bike between his knees, and the grin on his face was a mile wide. It had worked. At least we were still alive, and Mike wasn't 2 feet away. Where did we go from here? I had to think, but my brain was wet wool. My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth.
Well, what do you know if it isn't Uncle Joe?
Something funny, kid?
After all the times you've read us the riot act about observing the letter of the law, brother, wait till I tell Annie.
Mike Kennedy, what's the matter with you? I didn't notice anything wrong.
Hi, Aunt Ellie. Nothing much the matter. Just Uncle Joe here proceeding sedately out the boulevard with his headlights up full.
Headlights? Oh, by golly, that's right. I must have forgotten to dim them.
You oughtn't to forget these things. Someday a big bad cop might come along and haul you off to the Hey, is that Annie back there?
No, it isn't.
It's our new neighbor, Mike, Mr. Anderson.
Oh, is that right? Oh, glad to meet you, sir.
Hello.
I didn't know there were any vacancies out our way.
Oh, there weren't any until recently. Mr. Anderson has taken the Charles place.
The Charles place? Are you kidding?
Nope. Looks like things got too much for old man Charles at last. He's clearing out for good.
Kind of sudden, wasn't it?
I guess so.
Oh, that's too bad. For old man Charles, I mean. Mighty nice for Mr. Anderson, though. Good places are hard to find these days. All right, Uncle Joe, I'll let you off this time. Give my love to Annie.
Mike.
Watch it.
Yes, sir?
Nothing. Just come see us soon, boy. Always glad to have you.
Thanks. I'll be around my next night off. Got a date with Annie. So long.
That was that. Mike turned his bike and headed back down the boulevard. The chance had come and gone. But it felt to me like half my mind went off with the boy yelling at him. It must have been a half minute before I could pull myself together and ease back into traffic. Nobody said anything. I didn't dare to, and neither did Ellie. I couldn't see her, but I could feel her holding herself stiff as a ramrod, scared even to turn her head. When two people have lived together as long as we had, each one knows what the other one is thinking. I went back to driving and praying. That and cutting my eyes up to the mirror, just in case there might be a white motorcycle eye following us. There wasn't, of course. Back in the back, I knew he was watching, too. Those flickering eyes darting like lightning between us and the rear window. He was too busy checking to talk. Not that that helped much. Rage and fear were pouring out of him so thick you could have grabbed a hunk of the atmosphere in your hand. It was queer to drive along that crowded highway, traffic streaming both ways, lights from drugstores and cocktail joints and eating houses blazing to the sky, know if I lifted a finger for help, I'd sign our death warrants. It had to be luck. All luck. There was still a chance I'd get it. The way I'd figured it, we'd started out with just about enough gas to get us back to Bill's station. When we hit that, the meter ought to show empty. The gas gauge was hidden from me by the rim of the steering wheel, but I was pretty sure I was right. I waited until I saw the red and green lights above Bill's pumps a block and a half away, and very slow and easy, I slumped over for a peek at the gauge. I leaned just too far.
Sit up.
Huh? Oh, sure.
What now? What were you looking at?
I was just easing the crick out of my neck.
Yes, you was. You was looking at the dad. What? Oh, so that's it, huh? Fresh out of gas.
Now look, I just remembered.
Don't give me that. You knew it all along. From now on, you keep your hands on the wheel, Mac. But you leave me do the driving. Go on, turn into that filling station. Get high-test gas and fill her up.
Hiya, Joe. Evening, Ellie. Oh, evening, sir.
Hello, Bill.
Bill?
Up to the top?
Yeah, Ethel.
Ethel, it is. Oh, I hear you've been to the pictures.
Uh-huh.
These people know everybody in the whole valley.
We've lived here 30 years, from back when this was farmland. Of course, we know lots of people.
I don't like it. Get the gas and get out.
Say, I was up to Miranda's for supper.
Is that right?
Boy, her chili gets better every time. Don't see how it can, but it does. Yeah, she's saving some for you. Said you'd be around after the show.
Miranda. Oh, my. I saw Miranda this afternoon and told her we'd be by for sure, Joe.
Oh?
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be $3.50 on the nose.
Three. And 50. Thanks, Bill.
Same to you.
What was all that about?
Nothing much.
Come on. Come on, I gotta ask you everything twice.
Miranda runs a drive-in up the road a ways. On show nights, we usually drop in for a carton of chili to take home.
I just hope she won't call home when we don't show up and get Annie all worried.
Wait a minute. Drive-in, you said?
Yeah.
And this Miranda could start checking on you.
Well, I didn't mean it like that. It's just that
she could call your Annie, and between the two of them, they'd have the cops on the lookout for you before midnight, huh?
You're crazy.
Yeah, like a fox. I kept ahead of the buttons all this time by taking chances. We'll just pick up that chili.
You want me to go to Miranda's?
Why not? Leave Annie get a beauty sleep. I can cover a lot of ground before tomorrow morning. I ain't eating so good lately. I could use the food. With you and the missus to front for me, what's to worry about?
And there you go with part one. Looks like our characters are in trouble.
Yeah, and I thought that, to be honest with you, I thought Elliot Lewis was, because he was listed in the cast. He just was must have been the producer, because I thought he was the cop that pulled up, but he was not. That was not Elliot Lewis. So so Elliot Lewis produced this, but he didn't, even though this was an Armed Forces rebroadcast. From Armed Forces Radio Service.
It's funny because Jim and Marion almost interplay like Fibber McGee and Molly, but in a much more serious way. They're definitely different characters, but yet
the
real
timing
life
is,
couple play off each other so well.
Right. Their timing together is just so good. It really is. And it makes it that much more enjoyable. Again, being a fan of Fibber McGee and Molly, that was one of the first, I've always said my first two programs that really got me interested in old radio was Fibber McGee and Molly on Comedy Side and Inner Sanctum on the you know, the scary side and or dramatic side. It's just so... Hearing something like this, it's just so cool. Hearing these guys who are proverbial being goofy, being a chance to play it straight.
Yep. And the thing that's fun about Fibber McGee and Molly too is that whole Wistful Vista gang, that they had so many interesting side characters that would you know, supporting cast that would color the show.
Yeah, I mean, and some of the great Arthur Q. Bryan, who also, he was Doc Gamble, but he also was the original voice of Elmer Fudd. He also played Floyd the Barber on the Gilders, Great Gildersleeve. He also played the detective on... or the police detective, or they had a homicide on the singing detective show, Diamond Private Detective, Richard Diamond Private Detective.
Yeah.
So you had that. You had the Wild Man from Mount Idy, Charlie Weaver, originating the old timer, and then you had. Bill Thompson taking that over, who also played Wallace Wimple. And a Wallace Wimple character, kind of, you know, the voice of it, got taken over in mid-1970s cartoon where they used that voice on a fish. And it may have been Bill Thompson. He certainly was young enough to have still been around for that.
He did a few cartoon voices. That character is hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, wasn't he Droopy?
He's always tortured.
Dog too? Bill Thompson,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
Droopy dog.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just had forgotten about that. Jim Jordan himself did one cartoon voice appearance in a Disney animated film, the original one about the one about the where Bob Newhart was Ava Gabor, where they were mice and they were like detectives type things. He was the albatross. Jim Jordan was.
Ah. Was it one of the movies?
I'm sorry?
Was it one of the Fievel movies, the mouse?
No. That was American Tail. That was this... What was that one? Bob Newhart was the voice of one of the mice. And Ava Gabor was the other mouse. Jim Jordan played the albatross who was in charge of and the lone proprietor of Albatross Airlines. They got into like a sardine can, strapped themselves in, and he took off down the runway. That, as far as I know, that was the only cartoon voice he did. And his last public appearance was on an episode of Chico and the Man. And he was a friend of Jack Albertson's. And he made one appearance on Chico and the Man. Said he hated television.
I got a face for radio. It was fun. Last night, our stories, the hostages in both stories really became a little antagonistic of each other. The stressful situation had them turning on each other. Tonight, our hostages, well, I think they're on the same page.
They are. They are on the same page. And that's, like I said, in the situation we were in, the one guy just basically kept quiet. One was busy ticking off the guy's hold us, and I was trying to keep him from killing us. Oh, well.
It's a pretty amazing story. You'll have to give us a more detailed report after the show. And then I want to hear more about this.
We can do that.
But thrills to be had as we go into the conclusion of suspense. This one's Backseat.
He was right about that. I went back to driving and praying. Miranda's place is one of those goldfish bowls, mostly glass, with light pouring out across the space marked for outside service, and music coming from the jukebox. She saw us pulling up, grabbed a quart carton off the back shelf, and hustled to the door.
Well, here you are, Ellie. I was just saying to Betsy, better fix up that chili, Betsy. It's about time Ellie and Joe were showing up, figuring the distance from Beverly Hills. Who's that in the back seat? Don't seem to recollect your face, young man. Though anybody will tell you, I never forget a face.
This is Mr. Anderson, Miranda. He just came out here from the east.
That a fact? Say, Joe, you plan to go straight up Ventura home?
Why, sure.
Don't you do it. Go the back way, even if it does take longer. Of course, a brush fire between here and your place is out, but there's still 50, 60 men patrolling.
What's that?
Well, that ain't nothing to what's going on further out the valley. That new fire's clean out of control. Just a licking up hundreds of acres. They've been sending truckloads of firefighters past here all evening, and the road's blocked for miles.
The road is blocked?
Well, for miles, they tell me, and all them poor ranchers losing their homes. Being from the east, you wouldn't understand. But brush fires is awful things.
Thanks. Let's start moving. We take the back way to your house.
To our house?
I say? Oh, you staying with Ellie and Joe?
Yeah, until the road is... until I can get into my own place. Well... what are we waiting for?
Night, Miranda.
Where am I? Be sure you come see me, Mr. Anderson. I've been looking for you.
So there it was. We weren't going to the country. We weren't going to be left to rot at the foot of a cliff or buried deep in brush. No, we were going home. Home to the kids. And taking a murderer with us. I still couldn't see Ellie, but I could feel her tensing up, tight as a pulled drawstring.
Mr. Matrick, you didn't mean what you said, did you, about coming home with us?
You know a better place I can hide out till the road's open?
But it wouldn't be safe. We've got neighbors close all around. If somebody sees you...
Nobody will see me. Nobody better.
Joe, couldn't we get around the fire?
Yeah, that'd be better. We could try. There are other roads through the valley. Listen, Matrick, we'll nose around and find a way through.
Cut it out! You heard the old biddy, hundreds of acres burning, firefighters, cops? Get off the highway.
We're going home.
No! No, I won't have it. Joe, you stop the car right here.
Shut up.
You heard me, Joe. I won't have him in my house, not with Annie and Bud.
I said shut up!
Oh, for Lord's sake, Ellie.
It doesn't matter about us, but the kids, I won't let him touch it.
One word of...
Joe, stop!
Ellen, hush. Don't
Joe.
Say another thing. I'm sorry, honey, but Matrick's the boss. We got to do like he says.
That's telling. Sure, do like I say, and everything will be rosy. You got no call to worry about. The kids, I like kids. As long as nobody gives me the brush off. We'll wake them up soon as we get home, and you and this Annie can fix up a chili supper for us. And we'll have us a picnic. Then, soon as the fire's out, we'll all take a trip to the country. Another picnic, huh?
You keep going. As long as you're breathing, you keep going. Even when it looks like there's no way out, you hang on by your toenails. We poked up and down those black valley streets that twist and turn and sometimes wind up in dead ends. Ellie stopped crying after a while. She slumped down with her head rolling on the seat back, limp as a rag doll with the stuffing leaked out. It took a long time, but it had to come to an end. I saw the bulk of the house looming up. There was light sneaking around the edges of the blinds up in Annie's room. She wasn't asleep after all. She'd be sitting up in bed, maybe plastering red stuff on her fingers and dreaming about the date with Mike. Bud's room was dark. He'd be wrapped in covers like a cocoon and dreaming. Whatever boys dream, I couldn't remember. I pulled up to the concrete walk I'd poured with my own hands before there was any Annie or Bud and cut the lights. In a second or two, my eyes got used to the dark. I could make out the high hedge Ellie planted around the place and the roof rising up beyond it.
Out, missus. Face the house. Now you, Mac. Slide out same side. Stand beside her. Walk to the door. Slow, no funny business. I'm right behind you.
You all right, Uncle Joe? Aunt Ellie?
Ellie, honey, are you all right?
All right, indeed. Smacked flat on my face on a concrete walk and you falling on me.
Nothing wrong with her.
My God.
Conducting out here. I won't have them mixed up in this thing.
Well, how's he doing, boys?
Got him through the gun hand and the right shoulder, see?
Lucky shot, cop. You weren't lucky at all, they call me now.
Maybe. Matrick, isn't it, Uncle Joe?
That's him. Miranda described him to you?
The old girl doesn't miss a trick. She even knew you were taking the back way home. You left a clear trail, Uncle Joe. Slick work.
I had to get him out of the car before the fireworks started. Ellie didn't stand a chance. She helped, though. Ellie catches on quick.
I'll bet she does.
A mean guy like Matrick, make him think you don't want to do something, and he'll break his neck doing it. I let on I was trying to run out of gas. That got us to Bill's. Then we both made it and made out there was no sense going to Miranda's, so we get bullied into going to Miranda's. If it was 1,000 to 1, she'd run off at the mouth about the brush fires and scare him into hiding out. After that, all Ellie had to do was turn on the hysterics. He was dead set on coming here.
Right, boy.
Right enough. You did all right, too, Mike. I was watching the rearview mirror all the time you were trailing us, but you never showed.
You knew I was there, though. When one officer starts double-talking another officer, he wants to know why.
Officer? Double-talk? You never said a thing to him except I'd bought some place out here.
The Charles place.
Poor old man Charles. In a tough spot and moving out for good.
What's wrong with that?
Matrick, didn't anybody ever tell you it wasn't smart to take up with strangers? Maybe I'd better introduce myself. The name's Charles. Joe Charles. Detective. Homicide. Tonight I was off duty and just taking my wife to a movie.
backseat driver. What a clever little ending.
It was. The first time I heard it, I never was expecting it. But it was. It would be a good story if it weren't for McGee and Molly, but I think it was even better because they were there. Suspense just does it again, you know?
Yeah, I remember being equally as surprised the first time I heard it too, Dave, but to come to realize that he was a detective.
Yeah.
And they were playing him the whole time.
Kind of
why during the break I kind of mentioned they were on the same page.
But you know what? No matter how much of a lesson you learn during the story, there's always a lesson you can learn after the story too.
You can. If you reflect a little and go back, you just might learn something. And now, Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. If you're going to hide in a car to commit a crime, make sure it's not a police car first.
Yeah, that might not be a good idea.
There you go. So, yes, Gar will not be doing his show tonight, so our thoughts once again are with Gar. Get better, buddy. Get better.
Yeah, poor guy's not even doing his own show tonight. He's not feeling well, so we're wishing him well, as always. We just heard a very dramatic story with Jim and Mary and Jordan. Now let's turn back the hands of time. We got a little something you found for us with Fibber McGee and Molly and Dorothy L'Amour.
Yeah. This was not actually from their show. But they did guest on other shows. Dorothy L'Amour actually was the host of a program called the Seal Test Variety Theater. And it, of course, she did a lot of singing, but she also had some wonderful guests. Fibber McGee and Molly, I know that Gildersleeve made one appearance. A lot of people, a lot of great stars showed up on there and did some different sketches and things like that. Well, this was from one of those particular shows. I think it was I want to say late 1940s. I don't have that particular show right in front of me, but it's from the Seal Test Variety Theater, and that's what we have for you right here.
There's a new streamlined train in operation these days, and one of the stops on its run is the city of Wistful Vista. And here, just getting settled in their compartment for a holiday trip to Aunt Sarah's, are a couple of people known as Fibber McGee and Molly.
Oh, my, isn't this a beautiful train, McGee?
Oh, it'll do. Put the bags over there, Porter, both of them.
Yes, sir. There you are, sir. And here's a paper bag for the ladies.
Oh, I thought they just gave you those on airplanes.
This is for your hat, madam.
Oh.
Thanks, Porter. Here you are. Buy yourself a few shares of AT&T.
My goodness, at a nickel a share, that'll be 5 shares. Thank you.
Ah, boy, this is the way to travel, you know it? First class. This train is just like the one when I was in vaudeville. I and Fred Nittany used to sit up all night in the smoker wishing we could ride on one like it.
It certainly is comfortable, and everything is... Oh, look out the window, McGee.
Huh?
Look how fast we're going. Heavenly days, those telephone poles look like a board fence.
We haven't started yet, kiddo. That is a board fence.
All right.
Hey, does it seem a little chilly in here? I'll open this window and let some of the cold air blow out.
That thing is stuck.
McGee.
Huh?
This train is air-conditioned. The window isn't supposed to open.
No train window is supposed to open, Molly, but... I'll raise this window, or I'll raise the roof off of this dad-ratted cinder bucket.
Look, now, if you're chilly, dearie, turn on the heat. The knob's right there.
Huh? Oh, okay.
Oh, for goodness sakes, company. Come in.
Oh, it's the porter. I didn't want any change, porter. Keep the whole quarter.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, folks, but the lady next door asked me to make up a drawing room, and I wonder if she could just sit in here a few minutes till I get it ready.
Well, of course. Tell her to come right in, Porter.
Yes, thank you, ma'am. You just sit in here, Miss L'Amour. It won't take long.
Thank you, Porter. I hope I'm not intruding.
Oh, not at all. Come right in.
I'd go back to the club car, but I haven't got a club, and you can't get a seat without one. So, excuse me. I'm Dorothy L'Amour.
Well, I'm glad to know you, sis. I'm Trevor McGee, and this is... Dorothy L'Amour. My gosh, they got everything on this train. I just turn on the heat control, and in walks Dorothy L'Amour. This is my wife, Molly, Miss L'Amour.
Well, how do you do? I'm sure it's awfully nice meeting you. Do sit down.
Thank you, Miss McGee. Where?
What? Oh. McGee moved those salted peanuts and the radio and the comic books and the picnic hamper.
Yeah. Sit over here, Dorothy. Dottie. No use being formal, I always say. Feel like we've known you for years. Anyhow, I've seen all your pictures.
Oh, they weren't mine. I just acted in them, I thought.
Well, you were great. We show people always stick up for other show people, you know. All us show people in show business. We all like to watch other show people, show. Know what I mean?
Oh, are you in show business, Mr. McGee?
A good question, and a frequent one.
Sure, I was in vaudeville for years. You probably heard of Powers Elephants and Fink's Mules.
Oh, of course. Which ones were you?
I was the act that come on right behind them. McGee and Nittany, snappy songs and witty sayings. We'd open in one, see, singing Yankee Doodle and waving little American flags.
Oh, now, McGee, Miss L'Amour isn't interested in your vaudeville.
Well, of course, I'm in radio now, and radio...
Tell us about yourself, Miss L'Amour. My, it must be exciting living in Hollywood. I've seen pictures of your home, and it's beautiful.
Thanks. We get a lot of pleasure out of it. We enjoy our pool a lot in the summer.
So do I, sis. What do you like best, snooker or just straight rotation? With an extra dime on the eight ball in the side pocket. Hey, I'll shoot you a game sometime.
No, dearie. Miss L'Amour means a swimming pool.
Oh, that pool. Oh, well. Oh, they're okay if you don't like to swim.
Well, you see, in the picture business,
picture business. I may come out there and take a fling at it myself one of these days. As a matter of fact, the story of my own life would make a fascinating picture.
Well, if they can do Al Jolson twice, they ought to be able to do yours once.
Of course, I suppose my natural resemblance to Ronald Coleman would be against me, but I think
to
I...
To whom?
Ronnie Coleman.
Oh.
Glad you noticed it.
Well, I thought you said.
Everybody says I look enough like Ronald Coleman to be his... Well, his...
His gardener. With dirt on your knees and a rake in your hand, and it's uncanny.
Well, on the other hand, I've had experience, too. I've already been in one picture, you know, Dottie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you ever run across a theater that's showing a newsreel of the 1932 Legion Convention, the guy dropping paper bags of water out of the hotel window, seventh floor, second from the fire escape, that's me.
Oh, wonderful. I'll watch for it when it comes to the neighborhood theater.
You know, I just loved all those Road 2 pictures you made with Bob Hope, Miss L'Amour.
Your room's ready now, Miss L'Amour.
Thank you, Porter. Miss McGee, it's been awfully nice visiting with you both.
Oh, we've loved every minute of it.
Sure, we'll be seeing you, Dottie. We'll drop in on you out there when I decide to crash pictures.
Well, just from what I've seen of your talents tonight, Mr. McGee, I can say one thing.
Yeah?
If you ever leave radio and go into motion pictures, it'll be a wonderful thing for millions of people. Good night.
Hey, Molly. Did you hear what she said?
Yes.
If I quit radio and go in the movies, it'll be a wonderful thing for millions of people.
Yes.
Hey, you think she meant millions of movie fans or radio fans? Did she mean it would be a wonderful thing if I got out of radio? Don't she know how the radio audience reacts to me?
How?
Boy, you stay out of there!
He wasn't talking to you, Ronald. Now lock the door. I'm sleepy.
Fibber and Molly, that was wonderful.
Yes, it was. As they appear with Dorothy L'Amour.
Yep. Always fun to get those little extras in there.
And that's Fibber, always angling, trying to get into showbiz or show off or
yep.
Or otherwise one-up people. And
always has these tall tales. I always try to, every once in a while in the movie show, I try to include one of those myself, and I always call it a fibber story, you know.
Hence his, is that how he got his name? Because he told big stories all
the
time?
Yeah, he told these whopper stories, and I think that's where they kind of decided to make his name Fibber, yeah. And some of them were really whoppers, that's for sure. But
yes, they were.
They did do a total of 4 movies. One they were also in, along with Mary Livingston and a couple other people. That was their first film appearance. They weren't really starring in it. They were just also in it. The next three, next two they did with Edgar Bergen, they were shared the lead. The last one they did basically starred by themselves. They didn't have any other cast, although they did have the Kingsmen in this come through, which were not in any of the other movies, which was the regular singing group in their show. And that was the last one. It didn't do too well. It probably would have been the cheapest one of the others to produce, but it just didn't make the money that they wanted it to make, and that was the last film that they did as Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yep. They were just a long-running act. Amazing.
And being the husband-wife team as they were lifelong partners.
Yeah. Yep. Like you said, the timing is just incredible between the two. They really did a great job. We, of course, are doing stories all week long, or weekend long, I should say, about hostages. There's been some good movies. Don't you think, Dave, about hostage taking?
Yeah, they're always kind of things, especially during robberies or botched up robberies. Not all of them are botched up, but the plan is to take hostages. I think the original Die Hard one.
Yeah, from 1988. That was a really good flick.
I thought it was too. Bruce Willis really outdid himself in that one. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he couldn't have done it without Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber.
You know, the better the bad guy, the better the hero can be. I don't think he had anybody in any other film of the diehards that were nearly as nasty as him. And therefore, that's one of the reasons I don't think they were quite as good.
Yeah, and the verbal spats between the two as they tried to gain control of the tower was just amazing. The battle between the two of them.
It was. I also think of, and we got the host of public domain movie Ida Lupino directed, The Hitchhiker.
Ah, yes.
And we had Frank Lovejoy, one of my favorite radio actors, who did get to do a few movies. And Johnny Dollar. O'Brien, and then also had the guy that became Berger, the district attorney on Perry Mason, who never won a case against him. I take it back. He won one case. Won one case. So.
Yeah.
I know it's off track, but since I brought in the Perry Mason, I guess, lady... who came up to him once said, Mr. Burr, I love your Perry Mason show, and I think it's great that you've never lost a case. And he says, well, ma'am, those are the only on cases that are aired on Wednesday nights.
That
he lost some, but they were never on the TV, which he didn't. It was just kind of a retort he did. So...
That's funny.
Back to other hostages.
We only show the winning cases.
That's right. There's no money in losing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What other hostage movies were you thinking about?
Well, Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock starred 4 years later after Die Hard in Speed, in which Dennis Hopper really makes hostages of an entire busload of people.
Yeah. I thought that, that was a good movie, too. That one definitely had me on the edge of the seat.
Yeah, it was a clever plot, you know, putting a bomb on the bus, and of course, Sandra Bullock has to drive while Keanu Reeves tries to disarm the bomb and free the people on the bus. It seems like there were a lot of movies like that in the era. How about Silence of the Lambs? There's a scary film.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, Hannibal Lecter is a hostage, of course. But, you know, the killer Buffalo Bill had the senator's daughter as a hostage that Jodie Foster had to rescue.
Yeah, I think there's so many shows and even, you know, police shows that are on where there are hostages simply because they use that to protect themselves.
Yeah. Geez, an epic film from our era in the 70s. Remember Dog Day Afternoon with Al Pacino?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a true life story about a fellow who tries to rob a bank in order to pay for his lover's sex change operation. It goes disastrously wrong and turns into a hostage situation.
It sounds like it was set out to be a disaster to begin with, yes.
Yeah. But a very popular film, and in real life, robbers actually developed a camaraderie with the hostages and the bank manager, who thought they were hilarious. Odd. Only in California can these things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you got Fargo. Fargo was another great Coen Brothers classic. With elements of hostage taking. I guess the film, though, that chills me the most, it's like the ultimate hostage story in a way, was made from a Stephen King novel. And I'm talking about Misery with James Cameron.
Oh, my goodness, yes. My goodness, yes, yeah. Taken hostage by one of your fans. Does that make you nervous, Dale?
No, I have none. I'm safe as can be. But not so James Caan, who played a famous author named Paul Sheldon, oddly reminiscent maybe a little bit of Stephen King, who knows. But he's captured by Kathy Bates, who plays the wackadoodle, if you will, Annie Wilkes.
I like that. That type of term, yes, that's good. and hurts him and breaks his legs and stuff, so he can't get away, so that she can take care of him.
Yeah, she hobbles him by smashing his ankle with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Mm. So he can't run away. I mean, that's just horrible. But a very, very, very good hostage film. And there's been others Man on Fire.
Yeah. I was just saying, thinking about it, wouldn't, in a way, House on Haunted Hill be considered they were hostages because they were trapped in a place they couldn't get out of?
Yeah, both versions. Of course, the classic Vincent Price, in which, really, he had something of a captive audience. Now, he did give them the opportunity to bail, but they couldn't win the $1 million. So it was a semi-benevolent hostage-taking, but hostage-taking nonetheless, because once the situation started getting precarious, they couldn't leave.
Yeah. Yeah, Vorbal Bite mentioned Patty Hearst. Where she was taken hostage. But, you know, there's always been the question, was she taken hostage or was she just one of these rich gals, of course, daughter of William Randolph, first or granddaughter, one or the other, and just wanted to be free of all that and kind of joined up with them. She did participate in some of and they had determined in court that, well, she was forced to. But the question would be, I always thought, you know, being of all that money and restricted of all the things that she was and wasn't allowed to do, I would always wonder. I just always wondered if she just really didn't plan to do that from the get-go.
I have feeling. I think a lot of us felt that way. I know I too. You know, we were but teens when that happened, and it always didn't smell right. It's like, you know, she seemed to have joined this. What was it called? The Sibian Lebanese
Liberation
like that?
Organization. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was the question of, did she willingly join a cult or, you know, or a terrorist group or whatever they were? But,
and you know what?
Know.
I think it was the granddaughter, I think. And the family certainly still had enough influence that when they were captured and she was captured and they went into court, that they could prove, because of the family influence, that she was brainwashed by them once she was captured by them.
Yeah. Wonder.
Because, you know, there have been
a
lot of stories that were not true, but were stories where people had themselves kidnapped just to get money that they weren't going to be able to get. So.
Yes.
Don't say those words. I don't know which words were. And then somehow I said it. I don't know. Anyway. He did also mention Radon and Tebby. Certainly were hostages there in that movie there.
Oh, Bridge on the River Kwai. Talk about hostages.
Well,
even though they were prisoners of war, you could call that a hostage story.
I would call it prisoners of war.
Yeah. Well, all right, I was stretching.
you were stretching on that one a little, yeah. Air Force One, when they took the president hostage in that, Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that was another classic. Here's a funny one. Two funny ones come to mind, as a matter of fact. Dolly Parton, Lily Tomlin, and Jane Fonda. Mix them together in the movie 9 to 5.
9 to 5. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They kidnap Dabney Coleman.
How they could do that to Buffalo Bill, I don't know. But yeah. He's always played some really nasty characters, hasn't he?
Yes, Dabney Coleman. Has. He was like the ultimate bad guy that you really enjoyed disliking.
Yes, yes. And you loved it. Whatever they did to him, you loved that.
Yeah. And another very funny one, I just watched it recently, as a matter of fact, rewatched it a second time, with Al Pacino, Sandra Bernhardt, and the great Jerry Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
You know which one
King Comedy. Wasn't that it? The King Comedy? Is that what it was called? Yeah.
Yeah, they're like fanboys, both De Niro and Sandra Bernhardt. And Jerry Lewis plays a character who's very much like Johnny Carson, you know, a late night entertainer.
Yes.
And they end up kidnapping him so that Al Pacino can do a stand-up routine. Because nobody's taking him serious in his bid to get into show business. And it's a pretty dark comedy. It's a fun movie.
I had forgotten all about that one, yeah.
There's a good hostage for you. There was even a hostage when in Raiders of the Lost Ark when Dr. Belloc kidnapped Marion Ravenwood.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
I'm trying to.
There's another one that's very frightening that I enjoyed. It stars Nicole Kidman. And I think she's with, is it Sam Neill, I think, on a boat. It's called Dead Calm. And Billy Zane plays this absolutely sinister bad guy They're on this yacht.
I have not seen that one.
Oh, my goodness. And I think, honestly, Billy Zane got typecast going forward into playing the, he's a very handsome fella. But I think he got pigeonholed into playing bad guys after Dead Calm.
Yeah.
That's a real good movie. You should check it out. I think it's a remake. I'm not sure of an earlier film, possibly with Robert Mitchum, maybe.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Could be. And here's another comedy one, Airheads, about this band.
Oh, goodness.
Brendan Fraser and Adam Sandler broke into a radio station and took it hostage so they could play their music.
That's a similar premise to King of Comedy, in a way.
Yeah.
We're going to break into showbiz some kind of way.
Yeah.
I hope there's no horror host listening tonight. Who knows? Be a great inspiration.
Well, we have a little extra time here. We could always head over to that wheel, Dale.
Why don't we stroll across the Erie House Studios here over to the wheel? And I think
Let me stroll. It's only 4 feet. It's not a big room. Not a big room.
Well, I'm trying to give the impression that we had a grand studio, and you just killed the illusion.
Well, we did put a new bucket of paint in it, so you know, we didn't paint the walls, but we just put a new bucket of paint in there.
There is that. Well, Dave, if you want to give it a spin, we'll see what comes up.
Sure. Let's give it a yank.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Oh, goodness. This is fresh. I've never heard this before. Falstaff's Fables?
Hello. Have you heard, "May I help you with the housework, Mother? I'll mop up the floor with you."
Yes, it's radio's famous poet Falstaff Openshaw with Falstaff's Fables. Transcribed Monday through Friday by Mars Incorporated, makers of Milky Way, the malted milk candy bar. Light, soft nougat, real malted milk. Smooth, creamy caramel, all wrapped in extra thick, pure milk chocolate. When you crave good candy, have a Milky Way. And here's Falstaff with Falstaff Jr. and another Falstaff's fable, a Western saga entitled The Shooting of Pecos Percy. Ready to draw, Falstaff?
Precisely why I'm here, partner. Shall shoot?
Shootest.
Goodest. Friends, in the cowboy days in the cow country, there lived an old cowpoke.
Excuse me, Dad.
What is it, lad? And I hope it's not a joke.
I just wondered, Dad. Western stories are full of cows.
As an old ranch hand, the truth of that I generously allow.
There's black cows, white cows, brindle cows, and cows as smooth as silk.
True.
Then why in heck in Western tales doesn't anyone drink milk?
That's a question, lad, that I can't answer. But it reminds me. Here's a word from our Spencer. Do you crave a candy treat? Something smooth and fine and sweet? Well, there is good candy near, the chances are. Yes, somewhere not too far away, you can buy a Milky Way. The famous malted milk candy bar. Caramel and nougat add their bit. That thick milk chocolate makes a hit. Milky Way. It's the bar that's a star.
And now, Falstaff's Fable.
In the town of Deep Freeze Junction, where winter weather had no mercy, there lived a tough man, quite a rough man, by the name of Pecos Percy. "I'm so doggone tough," he used to say. "I'll lick wildcats by the acre.
I shot so many men dead, I'm 36 ahead of the friendly undertaker. Now, just west of Deep Freeze Junction, amid the icy snow and sleet, there lived a youth who was just as uncouth. He was known as Squirt Gun Pete. A water pistol was all that he used. He was famous for miles as a fighter. When he killed you, folks said you were not only dead, you were also three shades whiter.
Blast my britches,
said Squirt Gun Pete.
I'm going to end this controversy. Going to find out by test which one's the best. Me or you, Pecos Percy?
Why, I'm going to kill you dead, Pecos Percy said. Said Pete.
Ah, yeah, fine as mustache.
Percy's six-shooters went bang. Their bullets sang. And Pete's water gun went ka-splash. When the mist cleared away, on the icicles lay the body of old Pecos Percy. And Squirt Gun Pete stood unruffled and neat, quite certain the judge would have mercy. Because all that he'd shot was water, you see, and the weather was cold as a freezer. The water all froze when it hit Percy's nose, and he died of a cold in the beezer. The man in the wilderness asked of me how many strawberries grew in the sea. I told him, sir, I cannot say. Who wants berries seen a Milky Way? Good night.
Falstaff's Fable, starring Alan Reed, Sr. and Jr., with a rhyming hand from D.H. Johnson, is presented by Mars Incorporated, makers of famous Milky Way candy bars.
Yes, whenever you crave good candy, wherever our flags unfurled, always say Milky Way. Milky Way is out of this world.
Dick Tufeld speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
And Dick Tufeld, as you may or may not know, was the voice of the Lost in Space robot from the 1960s television show.
Ah, and of course, that voice, Falstaff, was the one and only Alan Reed, the voice of Fred Flintstone.
Indeed it was. Love to hear him bloviating.
We have a few of those.
He plays a lot of boisterous characters.
We have a few of those available. We'll slide some of those into the wheel when we replenish.
Mm-hmm. When we replenish, the wheel is always full of good radio.
Yep. There's a lot there, and I've got some more things plucked to put up on that wheel, so we'll see what happens. And yet, I never know where it's going to go. Dale spins that wheel. He's the one there viewing the wheel, and he tells us what's going to be there that particular spin.
Yeah, it just lands at random, and that's what comes up, and they're lots and lots of fun.
Well,
so much fun! I think we should do another one.
Well, we could, or I could get that story out of the way.
Not out of the way. I think I'd rather hear the story. Let's if we have time, we'll spin the wheel again.
We'll still have plenty of time. This is back in 1999. Back in 1999, and of course, I was working for the Service for the Blind. Also in that building was a bingo, and people basically they busted in at. I want to say I'm thinking probably about 10:30 in the morning, and
I had went
to the door and I had my hand on it to see who it was because I didn't really see who it was, and he pushed me and started wrestling with me, and I kept kind of wrestling until I heard John Davison, and he had actually just gotten out of the hospital. He had some third-degree burns, and he was at Akron Children's Hospital burn unit. And he's saying, don't shoot, and I stopped struggling, and I saw that there was a gun right to his head. I stopped struggling at this point, and they put us into the office, and look, where's the money? I said, what are you talking about? Where's the bingo money? I said, this is a radio station for the blind. And at first they didn't believe it until they looked around and really all the lights in the bingo hall were off and everything. and they decided to wait until the manager of the bingo came in many hours, actually it would have been about 6 hours later, to get ready to open up for the bingo. These guys were so brilliant, they were robbing a bingo before the bingo. When is the money there? After the bingo, not before the bingo. So anyway, what they decided was they decided to split us up, and they took me out and kind of taped me to the chair in the snack bar out in the bingo area and separated the three of us so they wouldn't know. And every half an hour, they wheeled James in, took off his tape so he could make the announcements because they didn't want anybody getting suspicious. And calling in. In the meantime, a friend of John's and mine, Dave Porter, who was a friend of mine who passed away from cancer just a year and a half ago here, he worked for AT&T, and he saw both of our cars, so he stopped by to say, hey, guys, you want to do lunch or something? And he kept knocking on the door, and that made him very nervous. And so he said, who's this guy from the phone company who's keep banging on the door? He says, he's just here to empty out the payphone. So, you know, if you just leave it alone, he'll go away. And actually, he did go away. He was mad at himself that he didn't think anything was wrong later on when he found out what had happened. But we were actually there for about 6 hours. And the fact is, I was pretty close to a side door, and I could get away from where I was. But they did have guns, and I was afraid of what they would do to James and John when it happened. When the bingo manager got there, they were waiting for him at the back door. They took his briefcase, which only had $1,200 to start the bingo off with. It was basically the change to open the bingo off with. And they ran out the door, and it was over. I was going to say as quick as that, but it was basically a six-hour wait time between the time that they first entered and the time that they ran out the door. They eventually were caught. They had robbed a bunch of Toys R Us when they did eventually catch. Yeah. Actually, they even stole a bunch of the Jeffrey money, and when they did get caught and they searched their homes, they found the Jeffrey money there. They did find out that the mother of one of the two guys was actually one of the regular bingo players there, and she was probably talking about, man, they make so much money there at that bingo. They say, hey, let's rob the bingo. And that was in 1999, and just last year, the first of the two, the one that rolled over on the other one, got out of prison, and the other one's due to be out, I think, this year. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. The news was there after the police did their questioning and such. So,
and yet, well, to keep your cool.
I thought of maybe if I could go out and get help, but the fact is I was afraid of what they would do to them, and that's one of the reasons they separated us, I think. Dale, you know how big I am. The one guy that I had wrestled with picked me up by one hand at one point because they had us on the ground. Picked me up by the belt with one hand. We found out later the two actually had full ride scholarships. One was a track runner. That's actually the guy the police caught. The other guy had a full ride scholarship to the Browns. He actually had a they didn't make it at college. Gee, I wonder why. The one guy actually, he had a full ride scholarship for football, and he actually had a letter at home, an invitation from the Browns to come to the mini camps to try out for the Browns. And he, in a sense, blew all that opportunity because he wanted to go around and rob Toys R Us, a bingo hall before the bingo, and blew his chance of what could have been millions if he would have made the team.
Yeah, well, it's, I don't know.
But, we were on the news, the we were on the Cleveland News, and when they finally caught him, they said, can we come talk to you again? I said, you talk to me. You caught him. I'm done. Thanks.
Glad it was over. Ugh.
You know, I almost thought about writing when that just before I started doing writing the radio plays. I almost thought of writing a radio play similar to that, and I almost based it on one question, one of the last questions the police, or actually it was the reporters asked me. I said, so did they actually steal anything from you? And I said, yeah, they stole my innocence. And because that's the kind of stuff you see in the movies, you see it on television. It's the kind of stuff that doesn't happen to you that did.
In a way, they did. In a way, they did steal that from you.
So, that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. Now we got time for you to go up to the wheel.
I think I will. I think I'll wander up here and give it a little tug.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Good evening. I'm Edward Anonymous. The name of the record is Person to Pearson. And tonight, we're going down to the Lower East Side, where our live cameras are set up behind an A&P store. And there you'll meet Mr. J. Pierpont Pearson. Ah, there's our man now, sitting on that rutabaga crate. Hello there, Mr. Pearson.
Hello there, Ed.
Mr. Pearson,
why don't you just pull up a rutabaga crate?
Thank you. What does a man like yourself call home, Mr. Pearson? Where do you sleep at night?
Right here. I sleep behind the A&P store.
Mind telling us why?
No. It was because of a great personal tragedy.
Mm-hmm. And what was that?
They kicked me out from behind the Piggly Wiggly.
Well, Mr. Pearson, I imagine then you have to be up and about your business before they open the store in the morning.
Oh, yeah, I gotta move quicker. The A&P man will catch me.
I take it you have an alarm clock?
No, I got me a clock rat. Bites me awake every morning at 6 o'clock.
A clock rat, did you say?
Yeah, his name's Brailsworth.
Brailsworth?
He's been my friend, my clock, and my companion for 12 glorious years.
A unique association indeed, Mr. Pearson. Do you get along well?
Well, the first 3 years were the hardest, Ed. You take a rat lives alone, he gets shot in his ways.
But now he bites you awake every morning at 6 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Of course, his nip ain't what it used to be. Last few days, he's been gumming me awake. This morning, it was 8:15 before I felt them sweet little teeth.
I suppose you've thought of what you'll do when Brailsworth is too old to work.
Oh, yeah. I'll just put him out to pasture, down to the garbage dump.
Garbage dump?
I'll pick him up by the tail, swing him around my head 3 times, and let fly. He'll think he died and went to heaven.
And you, Mr. Pearson, what will you do when Brailsworth has shuffled off this mortal coil?
Well, I guess I'll just have to get me another rat.
A new clock rat, you mean?
That's right. I'll rub a little cheese on my leg, go down to the wharf, and hold auditions.
I suppose you might look the wide wharf over, though, and never find another Brailsworth.
Oh, never. Brailsworth has got the sweetest little blue eyes you ever see on a rat. He peers up at you with a kind of a wondrous look. And his beady little eyes...
A man and his rat. True Americana. We're deeply in your debt, Mr. Pearson.
Went to Caltech, you know.
Oh, you did?
No, Brailsworth did. I skimped and saved, and I put him through.
Why Caltech?
Well, I showed him a bunch of circulars. That's the one he ate.
Good choice.
He learned to run through a maze of them little corridors, then through a door, up a ladder, jump across a 4-foot moat, and punch a little red button with his nose. That'd make the food come down. Took him 7 months to learn to do it. And what do you think come down that chute?
Rolled oats, possibly. A little cheese.
Chlorophyll gumballs. Oh, it was a cruel trick in Brailsworth's book. He got so blame mad, he gnawed his way through the wall and come straight on home. Said to himself, home is where the garbage is.
Words to live by, Mr. Pearson. Thank you.
Is where the garbage is.
A wonderful
that one already has a moral built right in.
And Dawes Butler, yes. go wrong with that. Can't go wrong with that.
Butler's another one that played so many great characters, not just with his association with Stan Freberg, but in cartoons and so forth. Great voice actor.
Oh, just think of all the great voices he was. Yogi Bear and Boo Boo Bear, and he was a
lot of Hanna-Barbera.
A lot of the Hanna-Barbera, yeah. Trying to think. He was probably...
Deputy Dog, I think.
Quick Draw McGraw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not... He was... I don't know if he was Daddy Doggy, but he was Augie Doggy, I think.
I think he was Deputy Dog.
Oh, he was one of the two mice of Pixie and Dixie.
He was probably Jinx the Cat. That sounds like his voice.
Jinx the Cat, thank yeah. He ate Mises to pieces.
That he did. That he did. Oh, I wish I would have known we were talking about Dawes Butler. I would have had a lot of sound bites for you, but...
Yeah, well, we didn't know. We never know where that wheel's going to take us, Dale.
Yeah, nor where the conversation's going to wind. Even if we're talking about Eerie House TV, it'll be back sometime. There's stuff streaming on there. I mean, there's always something to watch, but unfortunately I can't upload new material, and by July 9th there will be live stream, original live stream, no more.
Yeah, and that's going to affect a lot of people who are running smaller channels out there.
They're gonna have to switch services. They're out there, but some of them are kind of quite costly, and to do the kind of things that we're accustomed to doing with our channels. But we'll see what happens. We will see what happens.
Yep, because you've always
enjoyed. All we know is Eerie House Radio is going to go a long, long, long time, God willing.
You know, thinking of Dawes Butler, of course, not only did he get to do some dramas in the 50s as well as all the comedy he did, and he did stuff even into the late 1970s when they were still doing these the Sears and the Sears Radio Theater and the Mutual Radio Theater. He was one of the constant actors in there. He was on a Western night. Sometimes he was on a comedy night, but he was a fairly regular on the Mutual into about 1979 as well. And I don't think he lived too much longer than that. But
I think he did pass in the mid late 70s.
What a tremendous, tremendous talent. He truly was. And, of course, so working with Stan and before that in cartoons and, of course, all those wonderful Hanna-Barbera on television, he and Stan Freberg did the first Beanie and Cecil, which was a puppet show. He could be heard throughout there and I'm sure commercials.
We get lots and lots and lots of stars here on Erie House Radio, Dawes Butler being one of them. We hope that you join us each and every week, Fridays at 7:30 Eastern and Saturdays, like today, at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. Thanks, Vorpal. Thanks, Foggy. Thanks, the other gentleman who stopped by. Sorry we didn't get a chance to say hi to you personally, but we really enjoy bringing these programs to you. Take care now.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Close.
The
Close.
Castle lights are growing dim. There's...
Yes, they are. In case you missed it the first time. But this timer has just gone crazy here on Blog Talk.
Yeah, I don't usually tell that story. I don't usually talk about it. But since I brought it up, I guess I had to tell the story. So.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's I would not be a bit surprised if you had mixed emotions about it to this very day. That's a
yeah, I do, and
quite a situation to be in.
I have much more fun experiences than that. If I'm going to tell a story, I'd rather tell a story about the exploding chocolate pies than I would about that. So I will tell you the story about the exploding chocolate pies, Dale.
Can't leave me hanging. You've got to tell me this story. You can't say exploding chocolate pies and not finish.
Well, one of the things I did, you know, because, of course, the bingo was there to help support the radio while we had the bingo. So one of the things we did was we helped take care of the snack bar and such, and I would go up to Sam's and do shopping there. But I would also go out and pick up the pies. Well, my car was in the shop, so I said, John, can you take me to go get the pies for the bingo? He said, sure. Well, on the way back, we put them in his trunk, and we got almost to right around where Akron-Fulton Airport is, not the Akron-Camp, but the Akron-Fulton. It's a small airport within Akron. Where the old original blimp hangar is, where they used to make blimps. We were about to turn left onto Martha to head to the station, and this big bang happened, and the whole car shook. And we looked at it. I said, I thought somebody hit us. And I looked at it, and there was nobody around us. And I said, what happened? He said, I don't know. And he said, maybe one of the pies exploded. The pies exploded. And the fact is, it's not the fact that John said maybe one of the pies exploded. It's the fact that I considered that one of the pies exploded. We got out of the car, opened up the trunk, and indeed, none of the pies had exploded. One of his struts on the back end of his car actually just took that time. There was, you know, there you have this, like, four struts, and one of them actually snapped when we came to the stoplight. But so whenever we looked at each, there's a lot of times we talk about, it's better than an exploding chocolate pie, and that's that's my exploding chocolate pie story.
You got me there because I really thought the way you told the story, you really had me going. I thought there was going to indeed be. Exploding chocolate pies. But.
It's like I always add this one to it. So it's not the fact that he said maybe one of the pies exploded. It's the fact that I considered that maybe one of the pies exploded.
Oh, that's great. Life is so much full of fun things. And you and I have gotten to do some really cool things, meet some really interesting people, not just at the trade shows, but even here on Erie House Radio. We've got more coming, don't we, Dave?
We do. In a few weeks here, we're going to have a special guest from the Shoestring Radio Theater, and it's a radio drama group out of San Francisco that has been doing radio dramas, weekly radio dramas, for 25 years now. And we're allowed to show also feature. Not only do we have both Monica Sullivan, who originated, but the person who helped from the very beginning, who helped produce it along with her, will be there. But we're also having two of their stories, have permission to play two of their stories. And of course, one is one that I did called The Mirror, and so I'll be holding my version back for quite a while. Then the other story is a wonderful, wonderful story, maybe one of the most horrific stories that I feel they did, called Wild Hunting. And it's just a tremendous story, and I look forward to sharing that along with everybody. And I think we decided it's going to come up on the 16th, that program, the 16th of June. So if you didn't, even in the archive, if it hasn't happened yet, or if it has happened yet, go to that story. You're going to find a wonderful story about how somebody can actually, in this day and age, create and produce old-time radio drama today.
And the means to do it at home are there. I mean, there are sound effects, and and pieces of music that are royalty-free or even public domain. And, you know, a clever producer can put it all together and make a nice radio play, or two, or 10, or 25 years worth.
Right. And, you know, also talking about that, Dale, you said how we get to meet such interesting people in and out of Goulardi Fest, is the fact that that silly show that I do, the Weirdness Really Bad Movie, has taken me to such interesting places that in many cases nobody's ever even heard of. And little private museums and things like that that are just turn out to be such cool things. And the people you get to meet doing things like that. I think Gar kind of likes it because he's told me it's, when I watch your show, it's kind of like the old sideshows they used to have on the side of highways and stuff. That it mm-hmm. reminds him of that kind of a thing. And that's pretty
you
cool.
You know,
I
think you've made him an honorary Clevelander, have you not?
I have. I've made him an honorary Clevelander. And actually, that one of the pictures of him has him in front of a WGAR microphone. And I thought, well, that's clever. He took the Gar and made it a radio station. But he actually did take that from a photo from WGAR, which is up here in Cleveland. Right now, it's only an FM. It was originally an AM and an FM. And at one point, it was an AM powerhouse. At one point,
yeah,
when we get around
way back
doing
in the day.
When we get around to doing the Everything Cleveland show, that's going to be somewhat prominent in there because the one and only regularly broadcast drama series ever to come out of Cleveland was done on WGAR. And he talks about going up there into the penthouse, which is where they broadcast from. He describes it. It is really, it's going to be a really cool show. And at the end of that show, he and I do a short Arch Obler bit called The Laughing Man. So
around. Arch Obler, it's got to be good.
And again, it was his, I think he originally, Arch Obler originally wrote that in 1938. And Europe was already basically, because of Hitler, already embroiled in World War II. And we were basically doing our best to keep out of it. And it was his warning saying, look, we can't keep on the sideline. When you get the story of when you hear how he describes how the world all ended, and a lot of it was because people sat back and didn't do anything when they should have, or as he described it, and how people were not going to put out the fire until they themselves were on fire. Very, very chilled down the back of your spine story by Arch Obler, without any monsters except perhaps we human beings, you know?
Which are, to my mind, the worst monsters there are. For us to create them, they have to be live within us. And that's just a little thought I have. So all you little monsters, thank you so much for listening today. We love bringing you these radio shows, and it's great to see and learn that there's people out there still making radio dramas to entertain us. You know, sometimes you don't, those of us that have long commutes, such as myself, you know, it's a great time to take in a great show without losing your concentration of your driving and be entertained on the way to and from work. Sometimes if you're doing tasks around the house or going for a walk like Gar does, and you just put them on your MP3 player, it's great to get these old-time radio shows, and you can listen to us bring them to you, because we've got a ton of stuff in the archives here. Go back and listen to some of these shows. They're just awesome.
Yep, quit your job, or at least take vacation time and spend time in the archives.
Yes, that's as you should. You should be obsessed with Erie House and listen to every single episode. Do it now. We'll wait. we'll sit here and wait. Now, with that being said, let's wrap up the weekend, the Erie House radio part of the weekend, and wish everyone a good evening.
Next week, Dale. Next week, we're going to doll it up for everybody.
Oh, those creepy dolls. We've talked about ventriloquist dummies. We've talked about other things. But these are actual balls, living dolls, and they creep me out. We're bringing them here next weekend.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.